Well, hey, everybody, I'm Adam Schell, the pastor at Malvern Heights, and welcome to our sermon podcast. In this episode of our podcast, we're continuing on in our new series called God on Film. And in every episode during the series, we're taking a look at a different blockbuster movie to see what each of these films can teach us about our faith. And today we're going to be taking a closer look at the 1976 classic, Rocky. And you know, when Rocky Balboa stepped into the ring with Apollo Creed, nobody thought that he would last longer than three rounds. But in spite of all of the odds, Rocky believed in himself. He put his faith in himself into action, and he did what no one had ever done before. In this week's episode, we're going to see that as followers of Jesus, we're called to put our faith into action as well, trusting that God can help us no matter what challenges we may face. So let's get right into this week's episode. The history of Hollywood is filled with movie moments that are hard to forget. Like, I think just about all of us remember when Darth Vader tells Luke Skywalker, "I am your father," in The Empire Strikes Back. And who could possibly forget when Don Corleone promises to make a movie producer an offer he can't refuse in the Godfather movies? And then don't we all remember when Dorothy Gale goes skipping down the yellow brick road when she's leaving the Munchkin Land behind in The Wizard of Oz? Well, another one of the most memorable moments in the history of movies takes place when a down-on-his-luck boxer goes out for a run wearing a ratty old gray sweatsuit. Now, if you just try to picture that image in your mind, it doesn't sound especially memorable. But all of that changes in the movie when a trumpet begins to play the opening notes for the song, Gonna Fly Now. Because when that trumpet begins to play, Rocky Balboa starts to run through the streets of Philadelphia. And what follows is perhaps the most memorable montage in the history of movies. During this montage, you're going to see Rocky as he runs through city parks and past street vendors. You're going to get to watch as Rocky does one-arm push-ups inside of the boxing ring and as he does sit-ups on the steps outside of the ring. You're going to get to see Rocky punch slabs of beef that are hanging inside of a meat processing plant. You'll get to see him work the speed bag in Mickey's boxing school. But the whole scene finishes, the montage finishes, with Rocky running up the steps outside of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, which I've had the chance to do myself. But as Rocky reaches the tops of the steps, he throws his hands up and he starts bouncing around in celebration because he knows that he has done everything that he can do to get ready for the most important fight of his life. And that's because not long after Rocky runs up all of those steps, he's going to step into the ring against the heavyweight champion of the world, Apollo Creed. And Apollo Creed isn't some sort of paper champion who's been ducking and dodging all the real contenders just so that he can keep his title and stay on top of the boxing world. No, Apollo Creed is the real deal. He is the best boxer in the entire world. And not only has Apollo Creed never lost a single fight, he's never even been knocked down in a boxing match. So in spite of all of the punches that Rocky has thrown, in spite of all of the miles that he's run, in spite of all of the work that he's put in training, going into the fight, nobody thinks that Rocky has a chance to beat Apollo Creed. The odds for Rocky going into the fight, he's a 50-1 underdog, and all of the smart money says that he won't last more than three rounds against the heavyweight champion of the world. And even though none of us have ever been in a situation where we've had the opportunity to fight for the heavyweight championship of the world, we can all understand how Rocky must have felt as he was getting ready to step into the ring against Apollo Creed. And that's because we've all had moments where we felt like the odds were stacked against us. We've all had moments where it felt like no one in the world believed in us. We've all had moments where it felt like the challenges that we were facing were insurmountable. We've had moments where it felt like the giants in front of us that we were fighting were never going to fall. Or to put it another way, we've all had times when we felt hopeless. We have. We've all had times when we felt hopeless. And that may be the way that you're feeling right now. You may be recovering from a recent surgery right now, and you have no idea how long it's going to take before your body fully recovers. You may be in debt up to your eyeballs right now and have no idea how you're ever going to be able to pay it all off. You may have a broken relationship with somebody in your family right now, You have no idea if that relationship could be possibly be repaired. So yeah, we've all had times when we felt hopeless. But even though Rocky knew that his chances of beating Apollo Creed were so slim that he doesn't even go into that fight dreaming that he could possibly become the heavyweight champion of the world, Rocky still has faith in himself. And as Rocky is talking with his girlfriend, Adrienne, the night before the fight, he says, "All I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed before. And if I can go that distance, you see, and that bell rings and I'm still standing, I'm going to know for the first time in my life, see, that I weren't just another bum from the neighborhood." So even though nobody else in the world had faith in Rocky, Rocky had faith in himself. Rocky believed that he could do something that no one else had ever been able to do before. Rocky believed that he could go the distance against Apollo Creed. But when the bell rang and that fight officially began, Rocky had to put his faith into action. But not long after the two fighters come out of their quarters and they start swinging at each other, it doesn't take long to realize that Rocky's outmatched in this fight. He has to withstand an early onslaught from Apollo Creed that probably could have and should have put him away in the fight early on. But Rocky doesn't give up. And round after round after round, he just keeps fighting. He keeps coming out of the corner. And along the way, he's able to land a few of his signature left hooks into Apollo Creed's ribs, which make the champion wince in pain. Rocky lands a few overhand punches that show this champion that the challenger he's facing has more power than anyone he's fought before. Rocky even manages to knock Apollo Creed down for the very first time in his career. But throughout most of those much of the fight, those moments are few and far between. And it's pretty clear throughout a lot of the fight that Apollo Creed is able to impose his will on Rocky Balboa, and that the champion flat out has the challenger outmatched and outclassed. But even though Rocky is undoubtedly outmatched in this fight, he still doesn't give up. He keeps fighting round after round after round. And finally, when the bell rings to start the final round of the fight, Apollo Creed can't believe it. He can't believe that Rocky Balboa has gone further in a fight with him than anyone else that the champion has ever faced before. And as the final round begins and the boxers come out of their corners, Rocky's not showing any signs of wilting, even though all the smart money said he should have lost 10 rounds earlier in the fight. No, Rocky comes out in that fight, he's still swinging. He's still throwing wild haymakers. He's still trying to land that one knockout punch before the final bell sounds. Now, I hate to ruin the ending of a movie for you if you haven't seen it, but Rocky came out back in 1976, so it's not like you haven't had a couple of chances to watch this movie over the course of the last 47 years. You know, so I'm just going to go ahead and tell you how the movie ends. Rocky doesn't win the fight to become the heavyweight champion of the world. Apollo Creed manages to survive through a split decision and a decision that was far closer than anyone ever could have predicted when that fight began. But even though Apollo Creed left that fight as the heavyweight champion of the world, Rocky was still able to accomplish his goal. Rocky was able to go the distance against Apollo Creed when no one but Rocky thought that he could do it. Now, obviously, the story of Rocky Balboa is entirely fictional. But even though this is a fictional story, it can still teach us something about our faith. And right now at Melbourne Heights, we're working our way through a series of sermons called God on Film, where we're taking a look at some blockbuster movies to see what each of these films can teach us about our faith. And Rocky can teach us an important lesson about putting our faith into action. But Rocky's not the only underdog story that can teach us this lesson. We can also learn this exact same lesson from what is undoubtedly the most famous underdog story in the Bible, and quite possibly the most famous underdog story in history. So if you've got a Bible close by or you've got a Bible app on your phone, I'd encourage you to grab it and open it up to 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now it's going to take us a minute before we dive into this passage, but just go ahead and hold that, mark that for a minute. We'll get to it. Because in 1 Samuel chapter 17, we are going to read the story of the greatest underdog in the entire Bible. We're going to find an underdog who finds himself in a situation that seems completely and utterly hopeless. We're going to find this underdog in a situation where he is facing far greater odds than the ones that Rocky Balboa faced when he stepped into the ring against Apollo Creed. But this underdog, he doesn't lose hope. He doesn't give up. And it's all because of his faith. Now, at this point, you've probably figured out that today the underdog we're talking about is going to be David in his fight against Goliath. And even though most of us have heard the story of David and Goliath a whole lot of times, more times than we can count since we were kids, this is still a story that's well worth revisiting because of what this story can teach us about putting our faith into action. So the story of David and Goliath, it begins when the Israelite army gathers to go to war against their greatest rivals, their greatest enemies, the Philistines, in the Valley of Elah. And the way that this works is that the Israelite army, they set up camp on one hill, and then you have the Philistine army setting up camp on another hill, and they have the Valley of Elah down in between of them. And we're told in 1 Samuel 17 that the biggest and the baddest warrior in the entire Philistine army goes down into this valley every single day for 40 days. And he walks in there hurling insults against the people of Israel, against Israel's army. And day after day, he challenges the Israelite army to send down one of their soldiers to go toe-to-toe, one-on-one against him to show whose army is superior. Now, the problem is that the book of 1 Samuel tells us that this, the biggest and baddest warrior in the Philistine army is a guy named Goliath. And Goliath is a massive mountain of a man. 1 Samuel tells us that he stands more than 9 feet tall. He's so big that he wears armor that weighs 125 pounds. He carries a spear with him, and the tip of his spear is made out of iron, and that tip alone weighs 15 pounds. Just imagine having to pick up a 15-pound weight and hurl it, how difficult that would be. And if you stop and just try to get a picture of this mountain of a man in your mind, it's pretty easy to see why no one in all of Israel is willing to walk down into the Valley of Elah to stand against this man. I mean, when Goliath walks down into the Valley of Elah, he is going into battle with weapons that would have looked more appropriate on a battleship than in a battlefield. This is a massive man that no one in Israel wants to face until David shows up on the scene. Now, when David shows up in this story, he's just a shepherd boy. He's not old enough to be enlisted in Israel's army. He is actually sent to the Valley of Elah by his dad, Jesse, to go in and check on his older brothers who are fighting on the front line for King Saul, the king of Israel's army. But when David gets there and he hears the insults, these giant-sized insults that Goliath is hurling at the army of the living Lord, David cannot believe what he's hearing. So David starts walking around asking some of the other soldiers that are with him, that are around him, saying, who is this guy? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he can hurl these insults against the army of the living God and get away with it? Well, it doesn't take long before David's oldest brother, a guy named Eliab, hears that David has arrived in camp, and he hears about the questions that David has been asking. And Eliab is completely angry and upset with his baby brother. And he's upset because he goes and he thinks that David has just come down to the Valley of Elah so that David can watch real professional warriors fight against each other, like this is some kind of professional wrestling match or something. But David doesn't back down when he's confronted by his brother. He looks at his brother and he says to him, well, tell me, what's going to be the reward? What's going to happen to the person who finally defeats this giant and brings an end to all of the insults that he's hurling against God and God's army? And it doesn't take long before Israel's king, King Saul, hears about the shepherd boy in his military camps, and he hears about the questions that David has been asking, and Saul has David brought before him. But even in that moment, and as he is standing before Israel's king, David still doesn't back down. He looks at the king of Israel, and he says, don't worry. Don't worry. Don't be discouraged. Don't lose hope. King Saul, I got this. I got this. I will go out. I, your servant, will go out, and I will fight the giant. Try to imagine the look that Saul must have had on his face in that moment, because he had to completely have his socks knocked off in that moment. I mean, Saul looks down at David, and he actually tells David, "You're just a boy. You're just a boy. I hate to break it to you, kid, but you're just a kid. And this giant that you want to go down there and face, he's been a professional warrior longer than you have been alive." But David still doesn't back down. He looks at King Saul and he says, "Saul, do you know what I used to do whenever a lion or a bear came in to where I was keeping the flocks and took one of our sheep? I would chase after that bear. I would chase after that lion. I would hunt it down until I killed it. And I would bring that sheep back even if I had to pry it from the jaws of that bear or that lion. And if God would protect me when I was fighting against a bear or a lion, then God will protect me when I fight against a giant." And in what could have ended up being one of those "be careful what you wish for because you might just get it" moments, Saul gives in to David. Says, "David, I'll let you go and fight Goliath, but I'm not going to send you out there empty-handed. You're a shepherd boy about to face a warrior. You need to be ready for this." So Saul offers to give David his own armor. Saul's own armor, Saul's own sword to wear and to carry out into battle. But in the next scene, which would probably be more appropriate in like an old Warner Brothers cartoon than a scene in the Bible, none of the armor fits David. Like, I can just imagine David trying to put on Saul's breastplate and it falls down right over his shoulders because he's so small. Or putting on Saul's helmet and having his head rattle around like a bead inside of a spray paint can because none of the armor fits him. So David knows that he can't wear Saul's armor out into battle against Goliath. It's not going to work. So David sets Saul's armor to the side. He sets Saul's sword to the side. And he goes down into the valley of Elah to fight this giant that no one else in Israel had the nerve to face, the courage to face, carrying nothing but a slingshot and a few stones. And again, why don't you just try to imagine the look that Goliath had on his face when David started walking down this hill, going down into the valley of Elah. But you don't just have to imagine how Goliath responded in this moment, because 1 Samuel 17 tells us how Goliath responded in this moment. So let's take a look at 1 Samuel 17 together. I want to start reading in verse 42. Here's what it says. "When the Philistine," that is Goliath, "looked David over, he sneered at David because he was just a boy, reddish brown and good looking. The Philistine asked David, 'Am I some sort of dog that you come at me carrying sticks?' And he cursed David by his gods. 'Come here,' he said to David, 'and I'll feed your flesh to the wild birds and the wild animals.'" Now, I don't know about you, but if I had some dude that was 9 feet tall saying those words to me, I'm tucking tail and I'm running away. Okay? But that's not what David does. David still doesn't back down. And as we keep reading in the story, we're told, "But David said to the Philistine, 'You are coming against me with sword and spear and scimitar, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of heavenly forces, the God of Israel's army, the one that you've been insulting. Today the Lord will hand you over to me.'" And then David goes on to deliver one of those lines, a line that should be every bit as memorable to us as when Rocky shouts out, "Yo, Adrian!" at the end of his fight with Apollo Creed. Because as we keep reading in 1 Samuel 17, verse 47, this is what we hear David say. He says, and all those gathered here will know that the Lord doesn't save by means of sword and spear. The Lord owns this war, and he will hand all of you over to us." What a great line. What a powerful line. "The Lord doesn't save by means of sword and spear." Now, we all know what happens next in the story. We know that David's going to pull out a slingshot. He's going to put one of his stones inside of the slingshot. He's going to spin that slingshot around. He's going to send it flying. It's going to hit Goliath. It's going to strike the giant. The giant's going to fall. And then David is going to take Goliath's own sword, and he's going to cut off Goliath's head. And when he does that, he shows that every word that David spoke was true, that this battle truly belongs to God. And when the Philistine army, when they see that their biggest and baddest warrior has been defeated, they all go off running as quickly as they can. But the Israelite army chases after them and makes quick work of them. But even though we know how this story ends, going into the story of David and Goliath, when David is standing at the foot in the Valley of Elah on one side, Goliath on the other side, anybody looking at the scene could clearly see that David was completely outmatched going into this fight. David was just a boy. Goliath was a man. David was just a shepherd, but Goliath was a professional soldier. David was too small to wear any armor. Goliath is wearing 125 pounds of armor into this fight. David is carrying a slingshot and a couple of small stones. Goliath has a spear that's point weighs 15 pounds. David is completely outmatched going into this fight. So David had every right and every reason to do what everyone else in all of Israel had been doing up to this point in time. When David looked at Goliath, he had every right and every reason to turn tail and run away. He had every right and every reason to cower in fear. But instead, David does the exact same thing that Rocky Balboa did in his fight against Apollo Creed. Instead of being afraid, David had faith. Instead of being afraid, David had faith. But the big difference between David's story and Rocky's story is that Rocky had faith in himself. Rocky believed that he could go the distance against the heavyweight champion of the world. But David knew that he was just a shepherd boy, getting ready to fight against a trained soldier. David knew that there was no way that he should be able to defeat a giant carrying a massive spear when all he had was a few small stones. But David trusted in God. David put his faith in God. And that's because David realized that no matter how big Goliath may have been, that our God is bigger. Our God is the God who created the heavens and the earth and everything in them, and that includes Goliath. Our God is the God who could take one man and turn him into the father of great nations, which is what God did with Abraham. Our God is the God who could part the Red Sea so that the people of Israel could escape from Egypt after being enslaved there for centuries on dry ground. Our God is the God who could save Daniel when he was thrown down into a lion's den. Our God is a God who could spare Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they were thrown into a fiery furnace. Our God is a God who chose to enter into our world. So as Jesus walked this earth, he became a God who walked on water and a God who fed the multitudes. Our God is a God who defeated death once and for all when Jesus came out of that tomb early on a Sunday morning, resurrected after he was crucified. So David knew that our God is bigger than any giants that we might possibly face. So in that moment, David wasn't thinking about the fact that he was just a shepherd boy. He wasn't thinking about the fact that he brought a couple of stones to a sword fight. No, in that moment, David knew who our God is, and he put his faith into God. And he put his faith into action, walking down into the Valley of Elah to fight against Goliath. We need to be willing to do that exact same thing. When we're facing our own giants, we need to have faith in God. When we're facing our own giants, we need to have faith in God. So when the odds feel like they're stacked against you, don't give up. When it feels like no one in the world believes in you, don't quit. When it feels like the giants that you're facing will never fall, don't lose hope, because God is with you, just like God was there with David. And when God is with you, you never fight alone. When God is with you, he will help you to stand before any giant. And if you put your faith in God into action, God will help you make it through. Let's pray together. God, as we come to you in this word of prayer, we're thankful for the story of Rocky Balboa and thankful for the story of David and what both of these stories can teach us about putting our faith into action, God. Because in both of these stories, both people faced insurmountable odds. Both of them felt like no one in the world believed in them. Both of them felt like the giants they were facing couldn't fall. But because of their faith, because David trusted in you, God, you were there with him. You fought beside him. You brought him through the battle. You helped him win his war. God, you know that every one of us has moments in our lives where we feel just like David and just like Rocky. We have those moments where it feels like no one believes in us, where the odds are stacked against us. And God, we just need to know that you're there beside us, that you are there with us, standing right beside us, no matter what giants are before us, God. So help us see you when we feel hopeless in our lives, whether we're struggling when it comes to our personal finances or our personal relationships, whether we're struggling when it comes to our health or our habits, wherever these giants may be, God, help us realize that you're right there with us. And if we'll just trust in you, God, that you'll help us make it through. We pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. Hey, it's Adam again, and I just want to thank you for tuning into this episode of our sermon podcast. And I hope that this episode has challenged you, that whenever you feel like the odds are stacked against you, whenever it seems like no one has any faith in you, whenever it feels like the giants before you are never going to fall, trust in God, because God is with you no matter what. And with God on your side, you can make it past any giant. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode, but we hope that you'll come back and join us next week when our next episode drops. As always, if you subscribe to our podcast, that next episode will be sent straight to your favorite podcasting app, or you can come and worship with us live on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time on our church website at mhbclouisville.com/live. We would love to have you come and join us. And in our next episode, as we continue on in this series called God on Film, we're going to be taking a closer look at the movie The Goonies. So we hope that you'll come back and join us. But until then, we hope that you have a great week. I'm going to be praying for you, and we'll see you back here soon for another sermon podcast.